And you are tuned in to 1440 KVON, the voice of Napa Valley. I am Barry Martin, and happy to have you along for this show. In this next segment, a little Napa Valley history, a little arts and culture, a little bit of everything, a little wine talk, as we welcome to the studios our guest, who is the director of a new film, and his name is Mark Chelyshev, and he is the grandnephew of the legendary Andrei Chelyshev. And the film that he's made is called Andrei, the Voice of Wine. Mark, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much, Barry. It's a great honor and pleasure to be here in Napa with you.
Fantastic. Let's find out a little bit about you before we talk about your famous grand uncle. You're a filmmaker, obviously. How long have you been making movies?
I started, let's say, with a camera, as most filmmakers, when I was 6 years old, and fell in love with that little sound of going tuck, 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 winding up that camera. We were traveling in Kenya with my family, and my father had a little 8mm camera. And then I started developing my own films when I was about 10, 11. And, you know, that whole process was amazing. You know, you're going in the dark room, and then later on, I studied philosophy and filmmaking and a bit of Napoleonic law in a university in Germany in Tübingen. As well, along with some very esoteric subjects like Pali, which is a dead language. But film has been one of my great loves since moving every 3 or 4 years since I was a child. When you go in a theater, the whole world disappears. And you go on, when it's a great film, you go on a journey like a great book. And you can forget about the world. So when you move from one country to another, new language, new sounds, new scents, new sensations, and sometimes it's overwhelming. But in every country, there was one thing that was the same, a movie theater. You walk in, and everything disappears when those lights go down, and the screen goes light, and those images go by, and you can go on that journey and escape. And I'm hoping that, you know, with my film, people will find that journey, that my film, like a great wine, has a beginning, a middle, and an end.
And so you told me off the air this film has already been seen on the festival circuit, as it's called, right?
Yes. We had a grand premiere at Berlin International Film Festival, Berlinale it's called. It's probably one of the three eminent film festivals in the world. You have Cannes, you have Venice, you have Berlin on the international circuit. Obviously, in America, in North America, we have Toronto, we have Telluride, we have here Napa Film Festival and Sonoma in California. So there's lots of festivals. There's thousands now in the world. But I was very honored that, you know, Berlin chose my film. Thousands of films applied. Mine was chosen, and it was one of 600 films with a gala dinner. And so it was great. It was a great event. Rick Sayer of Rodney Strong sent over 100 bottles of wine. They put together this dinner with a Michelin star chef, matching some Russian style foods with this Pinot Noir. And then we had a Pinot Noirs from what they call Spätburgunder in Germany. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you what, the audience kept grabbing those Rodney Strong bottles, and they went really quick.
Very good. So let's get into who this man was and why he's important and why he made this film. Andrei Chelyshev is one of those names that if you pay any attention, you will hear. People will reference him. You'll see it pop up in an article, in a book, a wine critic. And yet, I'm sure few people know the contribution that he made and what he was all about. So where did he come from? How did he end up being this icon in Napa Valley?
Well, thanks for the question. It's, he was born in an aristocratic family in Russia, in Moscow, in 1901. He died in Napa Valley in 1994 and lies there in St. Helena under Rutherford dust. He had an amazing life, but not an easy life. When he was very young, before the advent of penicillin, he was quite ill and almost died then as a child. Then later on, you know, when the family was forced to leave Russia because his father was a judge and the head of the Supreme Court of Appeals in Russia, and the family, unfortunately, due to the father, was forced to leave. His father was on the first list of Lenin to be executed. So that's quite a thing. And so they were hiding. And the first thing the Bolsheviks did is they burned the library. And that means all those beautiful books, and they had books in all kinds of languages, because that represented intelligence and the intelligentsia. Then the second thing they did is we had over 500 hunting dogs, and they killed them and then hung them from the trees lining up to the estate, to the road to the estate, because that represented the privilege that we had as aristocrats in Russia. And although our family was very liberal, we were still the enemy of the people in a way. And they escaped by train to Ukraine, which was at that point controlled by the Germans, and got out of the train and went into the woods. And of course, they all spoke German. They spoke French, so they could communicate with the Germans when they went across. And then Andre begged his father, who then became the chief minister of justice for the White Russian army in the south under General Denikin, and to fight as well in the Civil War. So he joined a military academy, became a lieutenant, and at one point, near the end of when basically the support of the whites stopped because of the Allies decided that, well, you know, we don't want to support them anymore, and with that support, they couldn't fight anymore. Well, Andre was left for dead, and some Cossacks saw in these mangled bodies this leg moving, and he threw him over his horse and saved his life. Of course, there were no cell phones then, and the family had thought that he had died. They already had a memorial service for him, and he comes back.
Wow, what a story.
It's a novel. I mean, you know.
We're talking about 1917, 1918?
This is probably about 1919. 1918. Yeah.
So he's a teenager. He's 18 years old.
Yeah, he's 18 years old. And then he escapes with like 200 other 70,000 members of the Russian military to Constantinople. And those ships were languishing in the bay there because they wouldn't let him get off. Finally, they did let him get off. And then he worked as he could just to make some money. I mean, they had nothing. You know, he worked delivering laundry, and he used to sleep under, you know, in the bathhouses there. And, you know, then the fleas, and he'd call in the French, the punaise would always get him, you know. Alison Green Dorn would talk about this in one of the interviews, about how Andre would talk about, you know, being bitten up by fleas, you know. And here's this kid, you know, who grew up as, you know, with all the privilege in the world. Then he was... With his army, he went to Bulgaria, and he worked in the mines, and in the area where they make, you know, they make this incredible rose petals. And so the smell, you're coming out of the mines, and the smell of the rose petals, you know, because they make these perfumes there from these rose petals. Mm-hmm. So then they were helping stop the communists from taking over Bulgaria, and he helped save the Tsar of Bulgaria. Of course, a lot of this stuff is not in my film. I have 300 hours of material. Mm-hmm. And how do you pack a life from 1901 to 1994 mm-hmm. into 98 minutes?
Yeah.
And that's the tough thing. So my point was to make the spirit of this man. And after Bulgaria, then he had a nonsense passport. And if you have a chance, and everybody out there, look that up. It's amazing what they did. These were refugees. And Nansen created a passport for refugees because they were stateless. They had no, I mean, there was no Tsarist Russia anymore, and that's the passport they held. And with that, he was able to get a place at the University of Brno in present-day Czechoslovakia, or Czech Republic, and where he studied agricultural engineering. He actually wanted to be a doctor, but he got a job and, you know, got a place in the University for Agricultural Engineering. And he thought, as many of the Russians did, that when he would go back, he would be able to then bring that knowledge back to Russia to help rebuild it when communism would be over. Mm-hmm. And then he started working in Tokai. That was his first work in the vineyards, was in Tokai.
So he's in his 20s here?
Yes.
Yeah.
And from there, he went to Dubrovnik, where he worked at an agricultural station there, doing research, and then went to France. where, you know, he was married in you at that point, Dubrovnik, and went to France. They had their first child, and he and his one of his best friends from childhood, Prince Trubetskoy, decided to have a farm, and he loved husbandry. And so they put all their money, they put all their savings, had a farm, and a hailstorm, as he said, with the size of quail eggs came, and it killed all the young animals, destroyed the fields, and of course, the bankers are like, where's our money? And so they were forced to sell their farm, and because of that, he went back into the wine industry. Huh. If that hadn't happened, probably we wouldn't have an Andrei Chelyshev in the wine industry. Wow. He probably would have been one of the preeminent farmers in the world. Even then, at that point, he wrote two books on raising fowl, on how to make foie gras, and you know what to do, and how do you take care of your ducks and chickens, and as well as with husbandry too. You know, if you had cows and goats and pigs and
sure.
And there was one winemaker, again, actually it was Allison who told me when she had some chickens and they were sick, he told her how to help her chickens. So he had a vast knowledge. Hmm. And going back in the wine industry, he started working with Professor Marseille at the Pasteur Institute in Paris. And that's how he ended up in America.
Hmm. Interesting. What was the Pasteur Institute doing at that time?
Well, they were doing research. You know, the Professor Marseille probably was the chief researcher in France, the top researcher in enology and viticulture. And so they were working in ways to try to improve viticulture and enology. Mm-hmm. And when he was there, Georges de Latour, who founded BV here in Napa Valley, Beaulieu Vineyards, came to France looking for a winemaker. And he went to Professor Marseille asking, and the story goes, asking, you know, he wanted his, you know, best French winemaker. And Marseille apparently said, well, you know, do you want my best French winemaker or do you want my best winemaker? So he was introduced to Andre. And Andre had offers then actually to go to China, to South America. He was thinking about, you know, leaving France at the time. Mm-hmm. And received this offer from Georges de Latour. But when Georges wanted to bring him, he had a dinner at the U.S. Embassy in Paris. And Francis Perkins, who was the Secretary of Agriculture at the time, told him, there's no way you want to bring some stateless Russian to America. You have to hire an American. So he had good connections himself. He contacted his buddy, Hiram Johnson, Senator Hiram Johnson. And I have all these telexes. And Hiram Johnson helped bring Andre to America. So he made it possible for Andre to immigrate here. And he came in 1938 on the Île-de-France, arriving in New York City. And actually, if anybody sees my film, the ship that you see coming into New York Harbor, that is the Île-de-France. I try to keep my film as true as possible to every little detail. The 1926 Cadillac you see in the film is the actual Cadillac that Andre drove across Golden Gate Bridge in 1938 with Georges and Madame de Latour. Mm. And but people wouldn't know that. Of course, you know, it's not a book, so you can't write everything down, and you want the story to move on. Mm-hmm. So a lot of those details people will enjoy, but they won't know that I actually tried to make it as true as possible. No. So Andre arrived here in Napa Valley in 38, six probably operating wineries, I understand, were after Prohibition. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, the industry was a bit flat at that point. Yeah. On its feet. Mm-hmm. He really was instrumental in helping, I think, the Valley, as from what I understand, you know, from others, that to help grow this industry. Yeah. Not just in America and not just in Napa, but in Oregon and Washington. He was the first one to have a lab. There was a lab in Berkeley at the time, and of course UC Davis, but he opened the first lab in Napa Valley in the 1940s. Hmm. And then, you know, everybody would come by, the Mondavis, the Heinzes, the John Daniels, they'd all come there and come to him for consulting.
Mm-hmm. Let's take a quick break. We're talking with Mark Chelyshev. He's the director of the film Andre, the Voice of Wine, which is about his grand uncle, Andre Chelyshev. That's who we've been talking about. And there's a screening of the film coming up on the 7th of April. When we come back in a moment, we'll give you the details about that, the where and the how much and all that. Stay tuned. We're listening to the KVON Morning Show, and we'll be back with more after this. Back on the show right now with Mark Chelyshev as we talk about his film Andre, the Voice of Wine, which is about his granduncle Andre Chelyshev, one of the renowned names from the early days of Napa. It's interesting that, you know, Napa Valley and American wine had its moment in the late 1800s, and then the phylloxera epidemic, and then Prohibition. And so there was this big decline in this low spot, and it was not until really the post-war that it started to recover and take off, right?
That's correct. I mean, you know, after the Prohibition, six operating wineries in Napa Valley now, what do we have? I think 500 or
yeah,
so.
Yeah.
That's a huge jump, and that jump happened in the 70s, but up until, let's say, the 1960s, there very few additional wineries came into existence, and that's one reason Andre had such a great effect on, let's say, those particular wineries, because he came with this kind of European sensibility, but also the training from the Pasteur Institute. When he arrived, he was shocked, completely shocked. I mean, he found it had rat floating in one of the vats, and you know they were using iron pipes that were rusty. So he asked, you know, and tried to get the winery to completely change everything. You know,
this is at Beaulieu.
This is at Beaulieu, exactly. And then he was sharing his information. You know, at that point, when he would Amarine would come by, you know, Dr. Amarine from UC Davis, and then Georges Zeltour said, "Who's that? Who's that? You know, we can't, we don't let him walk anywhere." So Amarine then, you know, was asked to leave. But Andre's idea was that if everybody made better wine, it's better for the industry. And that's what probably one of his, as his son said, Dimitri, in my film, one of his greatest contributions is the fact that he made people work with each other, share their information instead of keeping it secret. Because if we all do better, it's better for humanity, tell you the truth. It's not just wine. If we help each other, isn't it better for all of us? So he was very good in that. But then also that he was a scientist. So he came up with, he was always testing things. Once he said his favorite wine that he made was the 1946 and the 1947 Pinot Noir, but only half of the 47 Pinot Noir. And the half was because Amarine came and said, "Oh, we have this new way of refining gelatin." Well, he liked to use egg white refining. And after they did it, he did half of it because he was willing to test, try something new. He only liked the egg white refining, so only half of 47. But then he came up with these ideas of how to do controlled cold fermentation. You know, all these vats and how to control the fermentation process. Sometimes, you know, when you're having the grapes and their fermentations are too hot and you don't want them to ferment too fast. So he came up with, of course, it always happened in the past for 5,000 plus years, but the idea of controlling that. Then we're talking about malolactic, the whole idea of malolactic. I mean, he came up with a lot of scientific methods, controlled malolactic, that almost every winery in the world uses today. But he didn't keep it for himself. I mean, if he had, I'd be a kid with a golden spoon in my mouth, you know, and, you know, off somewhere doing something silly and, instead, you know, he gave everything away. He gave all that information and shared it. And that's one of his, I think, wonderful contributions to the Valley. And you speak to any winemaker. I was with Greg LaFollette this weekend, who makes beautiful Pinot Noirs. And he said, any accolade that Andre gets from anybody is actually nothing compared to the man who he was. Hmm. I mean, he was a tremendous person, a true gentleman, but mischievous and funny. He had an amazing sense of humor. But he was very exacting in what he wanted the best from his, let's say, students. And later on in his life, you know, that's what he did. He really helped a lot of people, but he had a hard journey. At one point, he owned 50% of Buena Vista. Frank Bartholomew, who founded United Press International, mm-hmm. came to him and said, let's do this. And so he said, yes. So he took Buena Vista, which was in cobwebs, out of those cobwebs mm-hmm. and built the winery again. But Frank was a good businessman and saw the potential and kind of said to Andre, you know, I'm putting more money in, you should put more money in. Andre didn't have any more money and said, okay, well, you can't do that. I'll just buy you out. And that's what he did. And mm-hmm. a few years later, he sold it for millions and Andre didn't see a cent of that. Mm-hmm. And it broke Andre's heart because mm-hmm. he loved that winery. And he made a promise to the winery, not necessarily Frank. And he helped and consulted with BV Buena Vista until the day he died.
The oldest winery in Northern California, isn't it?
I think one of them, yes. Yeah, if not the oldest, you know, founded by Count Herasti.
Right. Another one of those threads of that European influence and the people who came and got things started or brought knowledge or brought passion. Herasti was a name that gets mentioned alongside Chelyachev.
Absolutely.
The story is told.
Absolutely. And actually, when you think about the first Vintners Hall of Fame that they did I think it was March 9th, 2007. Hmm. And that was the first day of my filming. And I had got a great crew, and none of that footage is in my film, but it was a great start of the journey.
Wow.
And when Andre was inducted, Mondavi was inducted, and all of these others were inducted. But if you go today to area Greystone, you see on all these big barrels people's names. There's one person who's on more than one barrel. And that's Andre. It's quite interesting because of his effect of helping and mentoring so many.
Yeah.
And it's not just one single generation. He worked with that generation in the 40s and the 50s. Then he started helping those in the 60s. He was helping Chateau Saint-Michel and telling them and advising them about, you know, how to plant noble grapes and pushing the idea of noble grapes in Washington State mm-hmm. and Oregon. Then you speak about the 1970s, and you know he was advising Warren Winiarski and many others at that time too. I mean, of course, also in the 70s was one of his, you know, another major tragic moment in his life, in 1969 when Bulliot was being sold without his knowledge, because Madame Dupin didn't want anybody to know. And although Andre had built that winery, because Georges de La Tour actually died in 1940. Mm. It was his, in effect, his winery. He put his heart and soul and life, and he had to replant a lot of the vineyards. And he reads it in the paper that the winery had sold. Mm. And but he stayed on until a point where he was told that, you know, they didn't want him in the winery. They didn't want him in the vineyards. He couldn't walk the vineyards anymore. And it broke his heart, and he stopped. He stopped on April 1st, I think it was 1973, and he took a really long retirement. On April, I think it was 2nd, he started at CIMI.
A few hours to rest up. Fantastic story, interesting character, and legendary, as I mentioned. Tell us where the film is going to be shown here on April 7th.
Well, this is a very emotional thing because, you know, this is in a way bringing Andre back. People haven't heard his voice or seen him since 1994. And there are a lot of people in this valley who knew Andre and were touched by him. So I'm really delighted and also nervous about showing this film to those who knew him, including his widow, Dorothy, who will be coming. And we're going to have a great crowd. It'll be at Lincoln Theater up in Yountville. A beautiful 1,200-seat theater there. And we're going to have, at 3 p.m. on April 7th, the film will begin with a small introduction, and then we'll do questions and answers with some of the winemakers that are in my film, including Dr. Richard Peterson, Dick Peterson. We'll have Rob Davis from Jordan, Rick Sayer from Rodney Strong. We're going to have Violet Gergich, who's, you know, a father, mm-hmm. Mike Gergich, worked for Andre for 9 years. Mm-hmm. And we're going to have some also a really wonderful tasting. And BV is providing wines for everybody that walks through that door.
Fantastic.
And it's only $20.
Wow. What
for
a
the
bargain.
Ticket.
And that I'm sure you can find at the Lincoln Theater website, Napa Valley Performing Arts Center. Festival Napa Valley is co-producing this with
co-sponsoring
Lincoln Theater. Co-sponsoring with Lincoln
Theater. Or you can go to my website,
yeah.
AndreTheVoiceOfWine.com, AndreTheVoiceOfWine.com, and there you can find a link directly to tickets to the Lincoln Theater on the top of my website.
Very good.
There's a clip of the film there, too, so if anybody wants to see a little clip, Ray Fiennes narrates it. If anybody heard of Ray Fiennes, I mean, he's one of the great actors living today, English patient, Voldemort, I guess, in the Harry Potter films.
Yeah. Shakespeare in Love.
Exactly.
Yeah. AndreTheVoiceOfWine.com, that showing of the film April 7th at the Lincoln Theater. Mark Chelichev, thanks for being with us today. Great segment.
Barry, thank you very much. It's a great honor to be here in Napa, and I really appreciate it. Everybody have a wonderful day. I love it here, and it's great to be back, and a great honor.
Enjoy the weather.